people say we don't need this war, but I say there's some things worth fighting for. What about our freedom and this piece of ground? We didn't get to keep them by backing down. They say we don't realize the mess we're getting in. Before you start your preaching, let me ask you this, my friend. Have you forgotten how it felt that day? Experts say if it was up to me, I'd show it every day. Some say this country is just out of looking for a fight. Well, after 9/11, man, I'd have to say that's right. Have you forgotten how it felt that day?
Welcome to the Shooting Bench on Survival Circle Radio Network, keeping you informed on guns, news, politics, guns, survival, preparedness, and guns. The tyrant is holding our country hostage, and our freedom is at stake. It's time to take a stand and tell the tyrant, we will not comply. Join me now in the never-ending fight against tyranny, right here on the Shooting Bench.
Dreaming in red, white, and blue. Only in America.
And good evening. It is time for the Shooting Bench. It's the 18th of March, and it's a Wednesday. And I always come screaming in Wednesday night just about in time to turn the computer on here. I outsmarted it, and I was 2 minutes early today, so made it a little bit better. I think I'm trying to get some other people to join us here. Give me just 1 second. I'll get my feet under me and get headed the right direction. Let's see. Okay, there we go. All right, interesting stuff happening right now. I was just reading, they've been teasing us here for the last, month or so here, about the new Glock 43. The new Glock 43 is a single stack 9mm, and that's the one gun that everybody has been crying and whining and sniveling about for begging, pleading for a single stack 9mm for years, I don't know how many years. And it is finally a reality right now. And it's a good idea. I like it. With the advent of this gun, I no longer will have a need for a Glock 43. I mean 42. The 42 is the little single stack 9mm, and the single stack 380. This 9mm is just a tad bigger, just a skosh. But it's got 6 rounds of 9mm, 7 with one in the chamber, as opposed to 6 rounds of 380s. And there's such a negligible difference in size that obviously I have no desire to go with the 380 now that they finally come out with this. That 380 is an awesome little gun. Now, don't get me wrong. It ain't like we were compromising by looking at getting one of those. But with the 43 coming out, the 43 is a real. It's out. It is a real thing. It's the real thing. Oh, that's a Coke. Never mind. So I have every intention of trying. Now, will I carry one every day? No. Maybe as a backup from time to time. It'd be a good church gun. But I am not one of those that has been begging and pleading for a single stack 9mm all this time. If they could make it a 10 round gun and make it a little bigger, then I'd be okay with that. But I don't have any problem. I mean, I'm a pretty good sized guy, so I don't have any problem whatsoever concealing a 26. You know, the double stack 9mm, the little mini Glock, as they call it, the subcompact. I don't have any problem carrying one of those at all. I have a chopped 23. It's a Glock 23 chopped down to a 27 grip. So I have the same short grip as the 26 and 27, but the longer slide. So it's easy to conceal. I would rather have, and it's not bothersome to conceal. Would the single stack conceal a little better and a little easier? Yeah, probably, arguably. The single stack gun is almost exactly 1 inch wide at its widest point. 1.04 inches, I believe they said. And the 26 is only, an eighth of an inch or so, less than a quarter of an inch, 3/16, somewhere in there, wider than the single stack. So, where I see this one shining now, I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm going to promise you one thing: it will set sales records for Glock. I promise you that it will set the world on fire with sales for a while. Everybody has been wanting one of these. Everybody but me. Do I plan to get one? Sure. I'm not going to break my neck to do it, but when I find a good deal on one, I'll grab it. I think it'd be a great gun for Amy. I would get one of those for her before I get one for me. And that's where it's going to shine. It's going to shine on the the guys that are slider build, you know, slimmer, dress clothes, you know, suits and ties and whatnot. It'll be a little easier to hide for some people. It'll be a awesome, freaking awesome, wonderful, groovy gun for women. It's going to be a little lighter, a little slimmer, and still give 6-7 rounds of. Now, I've never been a big fan of 6-7 round revolvers, but part of that is due to the fact that it takes so long to reload it, and reloads are so bulky. So with little slim single stack magazines for this 9mm, hell yes. Why wouldn't you? Particularly for those that are a little smaller build, you know. And not only for the ones that are smaller build, but I think it'll shine the brightest for that class of people. But it'll be fine for everybody. So I do have every intention of trying to round up a couple of them, one for me and one for Amy. And I think it would be a... Now, I'll tell you one thing. I don't normally like carrying two Glocks. If I carry two guns, I carry... when I'm carrying two, you more often than not, I have a reason, and both of them will be concealed. So with that being said, I would wear... any of my Glocks, I don't care which one, probably not my G20, but probably any of them in a inside the pants holster on my firing side, and the little the little 43 or well, let me finish what I was saying. I don't carry two Glocks because that is my most comfortable place to carry one. I'm not a big fan of the appendix carry, mostly because I have to wear a shirt untucked or something, or wear a jacket over it to cover it up. But it's real, real easy for me to carry a little five-shot revolver and appendix carry inside the shirt without a holster. And it works really well, and I did it for years and years. The semi-automatic does not carry that well in the same place without a holster. So with this little 43 as a backup to a full-size gun, it'd be you could either wear it inside the pants on your support side, which is not a bad idea to have a gun on that side of the on your, you know, where you could reach with the other hand in case you get injured or something. Or an ankle holster, or, you know, whatever. Just someplace you've got a unconventional carry vehicle of some kind, like a fanny pack or a merce or something like that. A shoulder bag. Man purse. Something like that. Or a purse if you're a woman, and, or if you're a guy and wear a kilt and carry a purse. Whatever. So, anxious to see them, anxious to try one. I think it'll be a, great, great seller. And if it has the, typical reliability and accuracy and everything of any of the rest of the Glocks, I guarantee you it will be a tremendous, unbelievable seller for a while. So, hey, BB Burner just joined us there. Let's see, who all else we got in here tonight? Let me check real quick and see if we got any. Katie Brad made it in. We're with us tonight. Looks like all of the usual crowd. Ziva, a couple of anonymous. Okay, Thunder 57, haven't seen you for a while. Glad you could make it. And actually, I'm glad all of you made it. I'm just looking to see how many new folks we got tonight. Okay. Now, here, probably right after the bottom of the hour, we'll probably have a Doc calling in. We've got some things we've been discussing back and forth here, and we'll let Doc talk about some of those things here in a little while. So stand by for that right after the bottom of the hour. Let me check here. I've got, you know, that can wait. Let me see. I've got some. You know, we talked the other night, since we're kind of on the topic of concealed carry, we never did get finished the other night with our 10 common concealed carry mistakes. This is written by somebody else. I forgot. Let me go look and see where it is. It's, not even sure, man. But, we're just borrowing it. I didn't write it. And it, because, and number one, I don't, particularly agree with everything that's on here. Everything's been pretty good up until the last one, not practicing with your self-defense ammo. And number seven, we've done six of them already. So number seven is adjusting in public. And that kind of goes along with one of the other ones up here, which was, let's see, printing and exposing, using cheap holsters and all that kind of stuff, fingering, checking the gun. That was number five. Well, that's not really any different than a whole lot different than adjusting in public. And what they're saying here is you, and this is how that woman killed herself the other day. She had one of those bra holsters and was adjusting. Either she's not wearing her bra in the right place, or she's got very little cover and concealment between her face and her gun. I don't know what the problem was, but anyway, she was adjusting it somehow or another, wound up shooting herself in the eye, and it killed her. So it's important that you, when you decide that you're going to carry concealed every day and have a gun on you, then it is important that you make sure that the gun is comfortable, that you wear it around the house for a while, go work out in the garden, go and make beds and do your laundry, go to the office, do whatever it is you do, and wear this thing for a while and make sure that it's going to be reasonably comfortable for you. You don't want to get out there on the streets around a bunch of people and say, damn, this thing's starting to rub me to death, and then try to adjust it around. And what happens a lot of times, and I've seen this happen before, is saw this happen in Farmington one time. And a guy was adjusting it, and he was setting it where was he sitting? I think it might have been a 9-12 meeting, I think it was. And messing around with it while he's sitting down, it fell out on the floor. Well, that's not cool. Certain types of guns, especially older ones, there is a slim possibility that it may go off when it hits the floor like that. So that's not a good thing. You want to try to avoid that. So that's one of the problems that can happen from adjusting it. And the other one would be just flat giving yourself away while you're, if you're going to carry concealed. I'm a firm believer that it should be concealed and that everybody shouldn't be able to tell it. Otherwise, you might as well just carry it openly, which I do most of the time anyway. But when I do carry concealed, I do it very discreetly. When I carry concealed, there's usually a reason for it. And one of those reasons is always going to be discretion. I want to be discreet. I want not to give myself away there. But if you do need to adjust it, then simple matter of just getting up and going to the bathroom or finding a place there behind a wall or a tree or something where you can adjust it a little bit without making a big show of it to everybody. Another of their mistakes, I very much agree with this one, and that's carrying on occasion. Oh, well, I'm not going any place where I think I'm going to need it. Excuse me, brain surgeon, Mr. Rocket Scientist. If I was going someplace where I thought I would needed it, I wouldn't go there. Simple fact. I am not intentionally, normally going to go where I think I'm going to need a gun. If it's that bad, I'm probably just going to stay home or take another route, whatever. So, but wearing on occasion, this is one of those things that I found the transcript, I guess, of the other book that I was writing here. I started it 5 years ago, put it on a back burner, and I assumed it just burnt completely up and never seen it again. Well, I got to digging around today on some old flash drives, and I found it. And I think I'm going to revive it. It's probably going to take me another 2 or 3 months to get it done. But I'm going to go ahead and get this other one out there. And this is one of the things I talk about in my book, and that is carrying on occasion. Making that decision to say, well, Do I really need to carry it today, or do I really need to carry it over there? I carry it all the time. I leave it in the car. So making that decision is just like I've used this analogy 10,000 times on the show. It's the same thing as getting up in the morning and calling the insurance company and say, "Hey, I don't reckon I'm gonna need you. I don't plan on having a wreck today. So why don't we just cancel that insurance and I'll let you know as soon as I think I'm gonna need it." So that's what they're talking about. So here on Carrying on Occasion is you are deciding when or if you should carry a gun. And chances are, you know, your chances are at least 50-50, depending on what part of the country you're in. You're probably around 50-50 that you're going to choose the wrong day to leave at home. Another problem here, and that is not understanding firearms laws. That's number 9. I very much agree with that. And not understanding the laws, there's people that sit through 10, 12, 15 hours of training and you go through the most excruciating segment here on laws and go through every possible thing. And people still don't get it. They still don't understand. Oh, did you say, please, come on, pay attention, would you? It's really not that difficult. But it is important, it is absolutely important that you pay attention to these laws and know if you can carry them in places that serve alcohol, know if you can carry them in some places if your gun prints through your concealment garment, through a t-shirt or whatever. If somebody can tell that you're carrying a gun but you can't actually see the gun, they see the outline of it, that's illegal in some places. So you need to know those things. You need some places, the silliest things in the world. Just like in New Mexico, it's a fourth degree felony if you carry in a place that sells alcohol by the drink, open containers. But in Arizona, it's nothing. As long as you have a permit and they don't have a sign up, there's no problem at all. In Colorado, you can carry openly right in the bar as long as you don't drink. In Utah, you can carry in the bar as long as you have a permit. You can carry concealed in the bar and you can drink as long as you don't get over .08. So every time you cross a state line, and in some cases, especially in places like California, if you did have a permit there, you cross a county line, you may wind up violating some laws you didn't know about. You might even go into a different city in the same county and have different firearms laws. So I can't stress to you how incredibly important it is for you to make sure that you understand the laws, even if you think that you're going to violate that law because you feel like it's an unjust law. Either way, you still need to know the law. Whether you choose to violate it or not is beside the point. Choosing to violate laws that you don't understand is stupid. Understand what you're violating and make sure that you're not going to get yourself in worse trouble by not complying with it. The last one here is having the wrong mindset. We talked a lot about this last night. We won't spend too much time on it tonight. We talked about the lady where was it? I think it was Gilbert, Arizona, that said she'd had defensive training. And she had, I think it was a stun gun and pepper spray. But she froze up. She couldn't use it. She didn't have the mindset. Going and getting that training is going to be a complete and utter waste of money for you and a good money maker for your instructor if you don't have the mindset to use the gun. This is something you may need to some people have to do some serious soul searching with this and find out if they have to. I mean, if they think they can. you may want to consult with your pastor about it. You may want to consult with some of the older members of your family. You may want to consult with somebody that you know has been through that before and has actually had to use their weapon in a lethal force case. And discuss that with them. You need to not go out in public with a gun and not know if you can use it or not. That's just dumb, folks. That's not a good idea. If you're pretty confident with your... Now, you know, the bottom line is, what's going to tell is when it actually happens. But you need to go through some mental imaging scenarios. Think about these things. Close your eyes and see the guy coming. He makes his attack. He does whatever it is he's going to do. And you do whatever it is you have to do to make sure that he is not successful. And go over this over and over in your mind and make sure that you feel like that you'll be able to use it before you ever start carrying it. Now, even so, you know, that may change at the moment when the gun comes out, when the knife comes out and lights go out and everything goes haywire. You know, you're still not going to know, but you need to at least have some kind of an idea. What I'm saying is, do not carry the gun with the intention of trying to scare somebody with it. You know, don't carry the gun. Thunder 57, good night, buddy. I'm glad you could make it in here for a little while. Don't carry it thinking that you're going to intimidate somebody. Don't think and pull it out thinking that, okay, I've got a gun here, and if you come any closer, I don't know what in the hell I'm going to do because I know I can't shoot anybody. So, you know, that's something you certainly need to think about. So, for the most part, I agree with what they had on this deal here. There's a couple of things that not exactly up to snuff with, but anyway, well, let's go to a little break, and sometime after that break, we may see old Doc calling in here for a few minutes and talk about some stuff. So I think I saw him in the chat room a while ago. If he, we'll just go on, continue to march here, and he may join us here in just a little bit. So I'll be back here in a few minutes.
South Alabama, her daddy had a heart like a 9-pound hammer. Think he even did a little time in the slammer. What was I thinking? She snuck out one night and met me by the front gate. Her daddy came out waving that 12-gauge. We tore out the drive, he peppered my tailgate. What was I thinking? Oh, I knew there'd be hell to pay, but that crossed my mind a little too late. 'Cause I was thinking that a little white tank top sitting right there in the middle by me. I was thinking about a long kiss, man, just gotta get going where the night might mean. I know what I was feeling, but what was I thinking? What was I thinking? By the county line, the cops were nipping on. Kicked it in four wheels, shut off the lights and tore through a cornfield. What was I thinking? Out the other side, she was hollering faster. Took a dirt road, had the radio blasting. Hit the honky-tonk for a little close dancing. What was I thinking? Oh, I knew there'd be hell to pay, but that crossed my mind a little too late. 'Cause I was thinking about a little white tank top sitting right there in the middle by me. I was thinking about a long kiss.
kill tattoo. Tried to cut in, I knocked out his front tooth. We ran outside, hood sliding like Bo Duke. What was I thinking? I finally got her home at a half past two. Later, daddy's in a lawn chair sitting on the driveway. Put it in park as he started my way. What was I thinking? Oh, what was I thinking? Oh, what was I thinking? Then she gave a come and get me grin. And like a bullet, we were gone again. Cause I was thinking about a little white tank top sitting right there in the middle by me. I was thinking about a long kiss, man. Just gotta get going where the night might be. I know what I was feeling. Yeah, I know what I was feeling. What was I thinking?
That's what I like to see, bullseyes, every time. And you can do the same thing with Byard Barrels. As long as you do your part, the custom barrels that you get from Byard Barrels will deliver award-winning accuracy shot after shot. Byard Barrels specializes in standard and 1-in-9-inch twist match-grade 22 long rifle barrels for the Ruger 10/22 and AR-15. If you want to win, visit their site at ByardBarrels.com. That's B-E-Y-E-R Barrels.com. Or you can call Clint at 360-374-9476 and tell him you heard it on the Shooting Bench, would you? Let him know that his advertising money is doing him some good.
Okay, are you ready? Here's Colt Reynolds with another maximum dose of truth and common sense on the Shooting Bench.
They say heaven's at the end, but so far it's been hell, and there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air, rolling them hills, and it's waiting for me there.
All right, and we're back. And Doc snuck up on us during our break here, and I think we've got him on hold, at least if everything's working.
Hello.
Right? Can you hear me, Doc?
Good evening, Cope. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I was having a little bit of Skype trouble earlier, but I think that's cleared up.
Well, it sounds good to me. Hopefully we'll check the chat room here in a minute and see if everybody else can do it. But yeah, Doc and I spent a little time today talking about the number of AKs that there are in the country and in the world, and we've come to the conclusion that there's quite a few of them. There's oodles and gobs of them out there, isn't there, Doc?
Well, I did a little Wikipedia research and some other online research actually over the past few days, and at least according to Wiki, there are approximately 100 million AK type weapons in the world. Of those, 75 million are true AK-47s or AKMs.
And the rest are, what, like Segas and stuff like that?
Yeah, there'd be variants like the Segas or maybe the Israeli Galil or the Finnish Valmet. Those are all Kalashnikov derived rifles.
Yeah. And they say that, I probably read, hell, I don't know, 25 stories or more today, and every last one of them, even the ones that were written by some of the gun grabbers, every one of them said the same thing about how utterly reliable that they were, and went on and on. It was like a written script for each one of them, because they all said the exact same thing as far as that goes. And they said that is probably the single most prolific gun in the entire world.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah, 100 million of them, that's a bunch.
And, you know, I would agree. I'm not a huge AK fan. I don't dislike them. They're sort of, I guess, similar to my attitude regarding Glocks. I don't dislike Glocks at all. It's just not my favorite personal carry weapon. And that's, you know, the same with the AK. It's not my favorite rifle, but I'm not going to badmouth it. You know, it is incredibly reliable, and it was designed with the peasant soldier in mind. Mikhail Kalashnikov, who designed the weapon in World War II, or began development on it in World War II, was very familiar with the characteristics of the old Soviet army, and it was indeed a peasant army.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was built for the SKS was built so the average conscript could pick it up with little or no training and point it in the right direction and make it work.
And a lot of people fail to remember that the old Soviet Union was, you know, really represented what so many hold out as the American ideal, which I disagree with heartily, but that was, you know, so-called diversity. The old Soviet Union spanned two continents and contained many different countries and many different languages. So they had to deal with soldiers who, in many cases, were illiterate, in many cases did not speak Russian, in many cases, like you said, had little or no training, and they still had to have a rifle that pretty much anyone could use and be effective with.
Mm-hmm. And I'll have to say, even if I were an AR fan or anything else, you can't take away, for one thing, that besides for the reliability of the AK, just like the Glock, they are so stupidly simple to tear down and clean and get back to you. You can literally do it by feel in the dark and without screwing it up. It's just so easy.
Well, there are parts to an AK you can lose in the dark. Back in my African days, they made us field strip a number of weapons blindfolded. And we never actually did it in the dark, but we did it with black bags over our head. Fortunately, you could breathe through them. And I saw, you know, more than one hilarious episode where somebody was missing a spring or a small part. Now, you know, it was 6 inches away from where they were desperately patting their hand around. So I think any weapon in the world has parts that can be lost.
Yeah, I imagine there are.
They used to make us field strip a 1911 and reassemble it in 60 seconds. And if you didn't do it or you're too late, they'd hit you with bars.
I bet a lot of people got hit, huh?
A lot of people got hit. A lot of people learned how to do it in 60 seconds, too.
That's so you're talking about they had to take it apart in 60 seconds or take it apart and put it back together?
Both. But, I mean, just field strip it, not detail strip it, of course. But you had to do it like grease lightning.
Yeah.
It's still, I don't know if I could do it now in 60 seconds. I haven't had a black bag over my head in about 30 years doing that. Not real anxious to repeat the experience,
I bet.
Much less get hit with a staff.
Yeah, I'll have to.
You know, I wanted to take exception to something you said a little earlier in the show.
What's that?
Oh, you were talking about the use of deadly force, and you suggested that people who are contemplating that and carrying a handgun might want to have a conversation about it with their pastor or their priest.
Yeah.
And good Lord, Cope, I think that's the last person I'd want to talk to. Nowadays, they'd probably tell you have a gay marriage and throw your guns in the river.
Yeah, you know what? That's probably exactly right. There's, boy, things have changed, haven't they?
Now, I was joking, but on a more serious and related note, I've never seen theologians as being the people to discuss use of arms with. They are way outside their area of expertise, and I mean they argue amongst themselves about what the scriptures mean.
Yeah.
If you want gun training, go to a firearms authority and trainer. If you want biblical teaching, go to a theologian.
Yeah, well, some people have it's the moral issues that I was talking about, really, when you go something like that is you can't really. You can get an opinion from a gun trainer or for whatever, but you know a lot of people might want to discuss that with someone different just from the moral aspect of it and see if they can get past some of their stumbling blocks.
And you know another issue I wanted to discuss with you And for the benefit of our listeners, Cope and I have never discussed this before. I'm coming into this conversation cold. We did no show prep on these topics. He and I were talking about AKs earlier, but not the training issues I'm about to get into. So I don't know if I'm stepping into the fire or not. I think Cope's going to agree with me, but perhaps he won't. Something I don't think I've, you know, maybe I missed the shows, but I don't know that I've heard you address this before. And it has to do with training. And, of course, you know, training is part of your bread and butter. You're a professional at it. But I've noticed a lot of people over the course of my life take gun safety courses of one sort or another. You know, there are a lot of states that require it before they issue hunting licenses.
Right.
And which is a good thing. I'm big on safety. All for safety. I'm an NRA Life member. The NRA puts out some fantastic curriculums. They have great courses. But there is a world of difference between a safe pistol handling course and an effective fighting course.
Oh, yeah.
Fighting course. It's two different worlds, and I've met, I don't have fingers and toes to count the number of people I've met who, in many cases, are concealed carry permit holders, and they'll tell me, oh, yeah, I took the NRA basic pistol course. I'm trained. Well, you're not.
No.
What you're trained to do is carry the pistol safely and not shoot yourself in the foot and, God forbid, shoot somebody else. You're not a trained or effective combatant because you've gone through one of these basic pistol courses.
Not at all. It's I've seen a bunch of people that's been through that still have a relatively low degree of safety. Still, people I don't like to be around.
So you know, that's just it's a common misconception. I think most of the people in the audience have probably heard people proudly proclaim, I've got my permit, I took the safety course, I'm ready to go. And, I mean, really, that's like the baby step. You're just getting started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just something to wet your whistle just a little bit. And it should, if you're a good, conscientious, responsible gun owner, that should give you just enough of a taste to make you want more. Just like sipping a little sip of fine whiskey. It's just enough to make you want to know more of it. No.
Well, go ahead and elaborate on that, Cope. Explain some of the differences between what you do and what people are going to get in the basic pistol safety course.
Well, you get into some extremely in-depth and a lot of times heated conversations about this between people that are people that have taken these classes, and also with other instructors that figure that they're the end all answer to everything. And as a matter of fact, some of the things that you learn in as a combatant, as you say, and with defensive training, some of those things are absolutely diametrically opposed to things that you would learn in your typical safety course.
That's right.
And if you take the hardcore NRA trainers, and they don't make good defensive pistol trainers. They've got to unlearn a bunch of stuff to be able to teach this effectively. And when you get into after action drills, even just the basic safety rules themselves, and they, like, I forgot what the NRA one says, something, I think it says something about not shooting until your sights are on target. And a lot of times we're going to be shooting when the answer, the key there is shoot when, keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot, not until your sights are on target. We may be shooting from a close contact position. Your sights may never be on target until the gunfight's over. So you don't want to get into that mindset so bad that you cause yourself to hesitate because you're not doing what your instructor told you to do or what you read somewhere or something. How you carry it, how you handle it, how you load it, you know, several things are going to be different. They're real big on all of your handling outside of shooting should be with the slide lock to the rear and the magazine out. In defensive training, you know, once we get that gun loaded up, you're not going to have the slide lock back in the magazine out until 3 days from now when the class is over. We don't want to develop those. I've seen people, as they finish something, finish part of a course, I've watched more than one person unload the gun, put the magazine in the pocket, and let the slide down and pull the trigger and put it back in the holster. You don't holster an empty weapon. You don't put empty magazines in your magazine pouch. I mean, there's just, you go on and on. There's just so many things that are immensely different about defensive shooting.
Oh, I agree, 100%. I mean, our instructors had us do things that would make a conventional safety instructor's hair stand on end.
Yeah,
well, it was probably a lot more extreme than some of the things you're talking about, but you know, we went through disarmament techniques, countless disarmament techniques. We had weapons pointed at us. We had to know the difference between different types of weapons, how to disable them, how to immobilize them. One of the courses I went through, they jokingly kept a casualty count of how many students in each class got shot or stabbed. And I was there for one fellow getting shot, actually.
You know, you're getting your money's worth in.
Fortunately, he shot himself. He had no one else to blame but himself.
Yeah, you know, in my I have a class called Applied Dynamic Responses, and you have to have taken a minimum of 6 days of training. Now, this still, even then, I'm going to make sure we're going to evaluate you individually and see if you're going to be prepared for this Applied Dynamic Responses. And even if you take the Applied Dynamic Responses class, when we get down to the end, to the last of it, to the test, you still may not be able to do it. Because this is one that is so absolutely against every safety thing that you've ever taken. But it is the only way to understand, without actually shooting somebody or being shot at, you get some earthly idea of how you're going to react in this situation. And
well, you know, Cope, that's a point that, again, the conventional instructors rarely make. Gunfights are not inherently safe.
And no, anyone not who, really.
I think it was Bill Jordan. Didn't he write the book that I took my cold medicine and it's getting late? I may be suffering from a senior moment here. But didn't he write the book No Second Place Winners?
Yes, he did. He was an awesome individual, too.
And I mean, the title is self-explanatory and very true. There are no second place winners in a gunfight. You don't go home with the silver trophy instead of the gold one. You just basically don't go home at all.
Right, going home means you win. Actually, exactly. Nobody wins in a gunfight when you get right down to it. As you know, if you manage not to get injured and go home, there's still a lot of psychological issues that you may go through and everything else after it's long over with.
So, yeah, start with the basic pistol. Start with the safety courses. Start with the CCW courses. Whatever you need or want to do. But don't let that be the end of your education. Understand that it's a never-ending process. You know, Cope and I were talking about older training protocols. I don't know if you remember this conversation, Cope, but I was going back 30, 40 years. I'm 58 now, and I really started shooting on a very regular basis when I was around 17 or 18. And, you know, one contemporary protocol, which is a good one, a good safety rule, wasn't emphasized and usually taught back then, and that was to keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to fire.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, you and I were talking about some of those old World War II news clips and training clips that we watched.
Right.
And if you watched those guys being trained with 1911s, they all had their finger on the trigger.
Yep.
Some of my earlier training, the instructors never mentioned keeping your finger off the trigger. In fact, with 1911s and Browning High Powers and similar single-action autos, they told you to keep your finger on the trigger. You were not literally, but almost using that thumb safety as a trigger.
Yeah.
In point shooting and, you know, similar things, which is really, it's bad practice. You
yes,
know?
It is. things have changed immensely in the last 40 years here.
But it took a long time for some of those new techniques to filter down through the greater gun community.
Yes, it did. Many years. There's one video out there, and I'm looking for it right now since you brought it up here. It's a early World War II. I think it's a 44 or 45. I don't remember exactly. Video. It's been declassified. It's a United States Army video. And Doc, it just makes me cringe to watch this. We do a lot of things that are very much make the average NRA instructor cringe, but man, these guys, he's handing these guys guns and he's got his gun in his hand, his 1911 in his hand, and they've all got theirs in their hand, and he's standing out there in front of them, and they're just all taking turns waving it around, pointing at each other, and
pointing it at you, right?
The difference here is that
handing someone a pistol muzzle first.
Yeah,
how many times have you seen that?
Yeah.
Even in the old training films, right?
Absolutely. But the difference here is that they are doing it completely unconsciously. That's the difference. If you, knowing your level of training and your attitude and everything, if I knew that the gun was empty and for whatever reason you had the need to point it in my direction, I know that you're doing that consciously and not unconsciously. When you start waving guns around unconsciously, that's when the accidents happen. If you need to, for whatever reason, you've got lots of people around, you're entering a building or something, and it's just almost impossible to keep from muzzling somebody once in a while. Doing it consciously is different than having no idea that you're even doing it.
Well, Cope, I've had a few close friends and associates. I've taught some of the techniques that you and I have discussed before, especially disarmament and real-world fighting. And in those cases, on rare occasions, we will use an actual firearm, not a training aid, not a reproduction, a real firearm.
So do we.
But if it's going to involve any muzzle sweeps of the other party in any way, shape, or form, what I always do, I have one protocol. I never fail to do this. I personally clear the weapon and show it to the other party.
Mm-hmm.
Then I hand it to them, and I insist they repeat everything I did, clear the weapon themselves, inspect it, and let me see it. And that's before we get off the starting line. That's from the get-go.
Right.
And, you know, you see a lot of people don't do that.
Yeah, and that's the way I do it is a little bit different, but it's basically the same thing, is I clear it and, double-check everything in the magazine well, and then I have two people look at it, which, you know, basically the same thing, but two people to take it and both of them to tell me verbally that it is empty and safe. And there are some disarming techniques that you just can't really do with dummy guns. It needs to be a functioning gun so that when you get to a certain point in that technique, you can demonstrate that the hammer won't fall or that the trigger can't be pulled or whatever. And you can't do that with fake guns. You can tell them that at this point it's going to happen, but they can't really see it.
And, you know, for our listeners who have heard, well, especially seen in chat, the banter between Cope and I when I pick on his Glocks. I really don't dislike Glocks. They're fine firearms. I'm just a bit more of a traditionalist in that respect than Cope is, and I grew up cutting my teeth on single-action automatics and double-action revolvers for the most part, and that's probably what I'll end my days using.
Well, it took me a long time to abandon the 1911. It was a hard choice. The Glock was a gadget to me. It was just it was something new, and I was single and had money, and well, what the hell, I'm gonna get one to just play with it. And at first I really didn't like it too much. You know, it took a while, but when I, especially after I put some of the, you know, got to where I modified it to suit me and realized the absolute utter insane reliability of this gun, then I started trying to learn to like it. And it was still 3 years before I finally just said, okay, I'm going to have to make up my mind. One or the other. I can't do both here. So,
well, you know, I was always trained that it's 95% operator and 5% machine. And, you know, so that, and you should also be able to skillfully use almost any weapon that winds up in your hands.
Sure.
So some of that, you know, you have to kind of lose some of the partiality and prejudices you held. You know, I'm sure to this day you hear guys talk about how unreliable AR platforms are.
Yeah.
And that's still a legacy from Vietnam 40 odd years ago. You know, the fact of the matter is, I'll say that the AKs are generally more reliable than the ARs, but that does not mean that the AR is now an unreliable rifle. It's one of the more reliable rifles in the world. You know, it takes a little more dedication on the part of the user, takes a little more attention, a little more cleaning, but the AR is no longer an unreliable rifle and hasn't been for many decades.
I'm gonna put this video in the chat room, and Doc, I want you to, when the show's over here, which it just about is, I want you to watch this. I want everybody to watch this video. And
now, what are these AR failures?
No. This is the one with the. It's called combat firing with handguns, and it is in the day in the 40s. This was state of the art stuff. This was as good as it gets. This was the best that this planet had to offer. But looking back at it now, this is third grade stuff. I mean, it's
right.
You know, we should not even be. Should not even be going there at all. But I'll stick that in the chat room for everybody here and as soon as we get done here. It's unbelievable.
Oh, Cope, while you're bringing that up, I just want to give you a little update on my invention. It has been further modified slightly better than ever, and there are moves currently underway to get the intellectual property, the patent protection going, and I hope to be able to show it to the world, hopefully here at the Survival Circle before anywhere else in the relatively near future. I don't mean tomorrow, but I'm talking about maybe a matter of weeks.
Okay. Well, I'm sure anxious to see your new improvements on that. I think it's a neat deal. And once you get the intellectual property protection and everything there, it'll be a little easier to take that out and show it to people and have something that they can, you know, something tangible. It's kind of hard to explain that on the phone and expect to get a commitment out of anybody, you know. But
we have to be a little close-mouthed, but for those who aren't aware, I've been working on a firearms-related invention that Cope has seen. Cope's seen a prototype and given me an initial evaluation, and I think it's kind of cool.
I think people that own that particular type of firearm would be... would really like that, especially those that, if you were in harm's way and out in the worst of it. I think that, you know, the recreational shooters maybe no, but if you were out in the woods with it, I think it would be an amazing asset to you. Okay, I stuck that in the chat room. Everybody let me know if that...
I just saw it come up on this end, Cope.
Okay, now the second one I think is playable. I'm not sure if the first one is or not. But there you go.
Well, listen, my friend, it's been fun. I see it's 11 now, and we're going to watch a video, so I think I'll bid you good night. I hope I've broken up the evening a little bit for you.
Doc, I appreciate it. I always appreciate it when you call. You've got a ton of knowledge yourself. I wish I could make it down there and spend a couple of days visiting with you. I bet we could have a ball.
We'll have a face-to-face one of these days soon, my friend.
I hope so. All right, good
have
night,
a good
Doc.
Night, buddy.
Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Bye-bye. All right, there's our own Doc Toops right there. He's definitely a wealth of knowledge there. Let me see. Let me get these things. All right, get all this turned off. This video that I just put up there, it is, it's 16 minutes long, so I'm not going to stay on the air with you and go through this. But I promise you, for those of you that are handgun aficionados, and for those of you that have trained with me before or had good, reputable, handgun training, this video is going to knock your socks off. It's unbelievable. I'd like to hang around here for 16 minutes and get some input on this, but I'll go ahead and let you guys watch it in peace, and I'll be on my way here. We've got coming up here. Let me go check while while you guys are. Oh, I did put another link in the chat room for you guys a little bit earlier. It's for those RATS tourniquets. The what do they call it? Rapid application tourniquet system, I believe it is. These tourniquets are, they may not be the very best. The CAT tourniquet probably is the best, but these are about half the price. You can pick these up for $15, probably cheaper than that if you go on Amazon and look for them. And www.ratstourniquet.com is where you can go check them out. And this is the thing about this one is it is designed to be applied with one hand, so that if you've got one arm that's injured, you can use the other one to apply a tourniquet on there. Science opinions have changed about the use of tourniquets. And putting these things, I just ordered some today, actually, so I could keep in some of my blowout kits here. And I would urge you to, you know, you can, I put the link in the chat room for you to look at, but you can probably get them cheaper than this if you go to Amazon. But I would urge you to get something like this or the CAT. The CAT is quite a bit more expensive. Great product. Nothing wrong with it at all. I've got a couple of them. But I'm going to get a couple of these because they're cheaper, and I just want to have extras around. And if I'm getting some just for extras, then I'm not going to spend quite as much money. But these applied properly, I think, will do everything that the CAT tourniquet will do and do it just as well. So look into it and pick you some up, put in your blowout kits. And B2 Basic. We may, now I don't know that the class would do you any good. It sounds like you've had some good training already. But we may try to see if we can find enough people to put on a Counter-Strike class while I'm up there. I'm going to be there for 10 days or whatever. So if that's going to be the case, then I probably need to be able to do a few things there and help pay my way. So we'll talk about that later when the time gets a little closer. But if you think that there's some people out there that may want to do something like that, we'll get a hold of me and we'll see if we can make it happen. All right. Well, I'm going to scoot on out of here and we'll see y'all tomorrow. Thanks for joining me. We'll have Amy in here tomorrow too.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of The Shooting Bench. Please join Cope Monday through Friday for the most politically incorrect firearms information show on talk radio.
Lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for you to decide who you are. Somebody should call them. Somebody should write a letter. Somebody should try and stop that. Somebody should do something. I challenge you to look in the mirror and tell me what you see. If there's somebody there, that would be you. It's time for you to do something. There is no doubt that the Constitution is hanging by a thread. It's not going to wait for us much longer.